A few weeks ago, my niece and I had breakfast together when she was in Raleigh on business. As is often the case with people who don't have children, I talked about my pets. And as is often the case with people who do have children, she talked about her son, Jack. She had a number of Jack stories to tell, but one in particular sticks in my mind. It seems that she and her husband were talking about whether or not they wanted to watch the new Dynasty TV series, and Jack, who was playing nearby, overheard them. When he asked what Dynasty was, she told him it was a TV show about a family that has too much money and fights a lot. How would you explain the Ewings to a five-year-old? Jack didn't say anything. He just went back to his toys, and she thought the subject had been dropped. But a little while later, Jack came up to her and said, "Mommy, I don't want to watch that show. Families are for loving, and they should have just the right amount of money." Families are for loving, and they should have just the right amount of money. I couldn't help thinking about these words as I watched a preview of our stewardship video on hospitality, which I think we're going to watch later in this service. And I was reminded of how many of us think of St. Paul's Church as family? How many of us feel welcomed as family and treated as family when we come here? How many of us feel like we are connected with each other and cared for as family? And if this has not been our experience, odds are it will be sooner or later, because when we say all are welcome, we really mean it. We believe that we are called to love God and our neighbor and to change the world. And we believe that this is a calling that must be shared if it is to be received. Yet, like any prominent feature of our faith, the commandment to love God and neighbor can become almost axiomatic so that it loses some of its power and its depth. I would submit that today's gospel reading from Matthew invites us to perhaps a fuller appreciation of the meaning of the commandment, not only in the time of Jesus, but also in our lives today. You know, there's a natural tendency among many people to want to reduce complex thoughts and ideas to formulas, in other words, to distill a profound notion down to a saying or a proverb that captures its central meaning. For example, it was said that there were 613 laws in the law of Moses, the Torah. Some of us tend to assume that those laws were obscure or irrelevant, such as requirements that were aimed at maintaining religious purity. But others, quite a number actually, provided for people who could not adequately care for themselves, people living on the margins of society. And the ancient rabbis, we're told, made something of a game of trying to see who could reduce these 613 commandments to the fewest possible number and still preserve the essence of the Torah. This was not a frivolous game either. The rabbis took the Torah with great seriousness. And so they, along with the prophets, taught that the law could be summarized in various ways. The prophet Micah, for example, asked, "What does the Lord require of you?" And gave three answers: do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. And Isaiah got the commandments down to two: maintain justice and do what is right. In light of this tradition, The lawyer's question to Jesus in today's gospel about the greatest commandment might have been the beginning of a serious conversation, except that the lawyer wasn't really interested in what Jesus thought. The question was just another attempt by the religious leaders to trap Jesus, who knew all along what was going on. According to the Jewish thinking at the time, all of the commandments were important in God's eyes, and all were to be observed for the glory of God. So it was considered a sin to say that some of them were more important than others based on some human standard or judgment. Knowing this, Jesus avoided the trap by naming two commandments, one from Deuteronomy and one from Leviticus, and then declaring that all the law and the prophets, basically the entire Bible at the time, depend on these two commandments. In other words, this is the point of the whole thing. The codes, the rules, the ordinances, the whole lot, they all depend on the requirement to love God and neighbor. For to truly love God is to truly love neighbor, and to truly love neighbor is to truly love God. They're not even two great commandments. There's no one great commandment. They're not even two, plus a lot of lesser commandments. There is one integrated whole. Now, Jesus could say these things because he knew the law. He was a child of the law, a student of the law. His life and ministry were rooted in the moral vision of the commandments given by Moses and illuminated by the prophets. And as he said in the Sermon on the Mount at the beginning of that ministry, he came to fulfill the law and the prophets, not to destroy them. But as we see in our reading, Jesus also had a question for the lawyer. You see, the Pharisees believed that there would be a Messiah, but they thought that the Messiah would be someone like David and descended from David. So Jesus posed a riddle to them that they could not answer. They were dumbfounded by the notion that the Messiah, who was prophesied in Jewish scriptures and understood in Jewish culture, would also be the Son of God, a Messiah for the world, and that loving God and loving neighbor were teachings to be lived out by and with all people in the world. The gospel then suggests that if we say all are welcome, we must mean all, no exceptions. And if we speak of loving God, we must mean more than just a warm feeling about what God has done for us. For loving God with heart and soul and mind is a commitment, a dedication of ourselves in every facet, every aspect of our lives, to God's dream for the world and everything that is in it. And if we speak of loving our neighbor, we must mean more than just affection. For loving our neighbor as ourselves is an attitude of caring for others genuinely, of taking the needs of others seriously and without judgment, beginning at home and extending to our neighbor near and far, friend and enemy, us and them. And so it is that we learn as a family to love God by loving our neighbor, and to love our neighbor by loving God. So you're right, Jack. Families are for loving. And there's a family in Cary, North Carolina, a family that is growing not only in numbers, but also in understanding of what it means to be part of the family of God. As for having just the right amount of money, well, maybe we're getting a better handle on that too. But if the law of Moses teaches us anything, if the gospel of Jesus teaches us anything, it is that loving God and our neighbor demands giving rather than taking. And if we learn this one thing, I believe we will stay on the path that God has put before us, and we will change the world. Amen.